Adversaries are relentless, and they're only getting smarter, faster, and more sophisticated. Knowing their game is the only way to beat them. That's why we're here. Learn what it takes to protect against even the most sophisticated attacks. Welcome to the Adversary Universe podcast.
Greetings, everyone. Christian Rodriguez here, and welcome to a special edition of the CrowdStrike Adversary Universe podcast. I'm coming off the heels of CrowdStrike's GovSummit conference, where members and officials of private and public sector organizations gathered for a day of insights into emerging and evolving cyber threats targeting the government. They also got access to strategies and procedures that agencies should adopt to stay protected. But as part of the summit, Adam Myers and I had the pleasure of interviewing the chief of the Cybersecurity Collaboration Center for the NSA, the National Security Agency, Morgan Adamski. If you're not familiar with Morgan has been at the forefront of the NSA's computer network defense and cyber analysis mission for more than a decade. Her leadership has been instrumental in driving the NSA's efforts to collaborate closely with the private sector. So, in this episode, we're giving you, our listeners who could not make it to Washington, D.C., an opportunity to hear how that conversation between Morgan, Adam, and myself went down. Give it a listen. Let us know what you think. This is the Adversary Universe podcast.
I'm pretty excited to have this panel kick off today with two amazing folks in the Intel community. These are folks that know exactly what the bad guys are eating for both breakfast and lunch, and maybe even dinner, depending on what time of the day it is. Our guest is going to give us a tour of the underbelly of foreign intelligence activity. We're going to walk through how you can protect your environments from some of the most sophisticated attacks. And I'm honored to actually bring to the stage my co-host of the podcast and head of CrowdStrike CAO, Mr. Adam Myers, and our very special guest, chief of the Cybersecurity Collaboration Center for the NSA, Morgan Adamski. Okay, thanks for coming out. Morgan, I know that the boogeyman checks his closet before he goes to bed for you, right? Oh. And so I don't know, I know for those of you that not familiar with your background, do you mind sharing a little bit about, again, your background and how you found yourself at the NSA?
Yeah, thanks, Christian. And just to be clear, I asked if I had Cheerios in my hair earlier, so I don't know if the boogeyman does that. But when you have young kids, you always have to check. So in my career, I've been at the National Security Agency now for about 16 years. I started my career in cyber analysis, actually following Middle Eastern cyber threats, right around the time that the Iranians were conducting DDoS attacks against the financial institutions. So I started kind of that work, which really got me just thrown into all things cyber. I spent a couple years on the 8th deck at NSA, learning about all the things that the agency did. I then went down and did cyber network exploitation and tailored access operations for a number of years. And then I thought it'd be really great to go down to the Pentagon and write policy. And so I got the opportunity to go down to the Office of the Secretary of Defense for Policy and be part of the team that wrote the 2018 DoD cyber strategy before coming back to the agency. And I was actually the third employee of the Cybersecurity Directorate.
Oh, wow.
So got to see how that entire organization stood up. And now I've been the director of the Cybersecurity Collaboration Center, which is operationalizing intelligence through our private sector partners for the last 4 years. And so it's been an amazing ride.
That's fantastic. In fact, it's a really good segue into the next question. Can you describe what the CCC is, and the mission and how it's evolved over that time that you've been here?
Yeah, so the Cybersecurity Collaboration Center was born out of the vision that NSA really need to learn how to operationalize the intelligence and the insights that we have with the private sector, because we both had different pieces of the puzzle. Mm. NSA has historically hidden behind a fence on 295 if you drive past the complex and your phone doesn't work. That's us. And so we really needed to build a bridge, both virtually and physically. And so the CCC sits outside of the fence line. It's an unclassified facility where we just went to partners and said, hey, we want to partner with you. We want to share our insights. It's going to be cooperative. You're going to get out of it as much as you put into it. We started with one partner, about 4 years ago. As of today, we have over 1,000 different partners that we talk to 24/7 through 800 collaboration platforms at any given time.
Oh, wow.
And it has been game changing for us from an NSA perspective, because great partners like those at CrowdStrike, who have unique insights and expertise on specific adversaries or technology, they can bring that to bear what we're seeing from a classified perspective. And we create this comprehensive picture, not only of the adversary, but also how do we protect and defend against those threats?
Got it. Adam, how are we working? How are we collaborating?
Yeah. They send us a lot of stuff. No, it's truly a partnership, and it's thinking back in my career with working with the intelligence community, and you know, they really, I think talking to people outside of the community was probably foreign, right, for them, and very uncomfortable. They're like, wait, we can bring our phones in here, and but we've had just a lot, you know, when we get into things like election security, which we talked about earlier, or when things like Operation Ababil pop up, if that's the Brobot was what she was alluding to earlier, the disruptions against the financial sector. So when things like that happen, we're able to collaborate and say, hey, here's what we're seeing. And then occasionally they're able to say, hey, here's some other stuff you should look at. And maybe if you see more, you can tell us. And it's truly collaborative.
Sure.
Yeah, if I can just build on that, I think one of the great things through our private sector relationships and the ones that we have specifically with Adam and CrowdStrike is, you know, when we talk about adversaries, if you want to specifically focus on the PRC in U.S. critical infrastructure, right? If anyone that's been in the operational space on the cybersecurity realm has been tracking this pretty closely, we look at the adversary in different ways, right? We need to better understand the infrastructure that they're using to get into U.S. critical infrastructure. We need to know the entities behind it. We need to know the TTPs that they're leveraging and the tradecraft. But from an NSA perspective, we only may have one piece of that puzzle. And so if we're going to be able to share infrastructure or TTPs with, say, our colleagues at CrowdStrike, CrowdStrike has that insight to better understand, okay, what's happening on victim networks? Are these TTPs that we've seen in the past deployed? Is this infrastructure potentially an IP address known to us that we've seen target some of our customers? And I think that's really the complete picture that we need to build, right? We can have insights in foreign space, and from nation state perspective, we can understand the intent of the adversary on what they're trying to accomplish. But if we don't have that relationship and conversation going on with our private sector partners, we really can't understand the scope and scale of this type of activity.
It's, I think it's worth noting too, what Morgan was pointing at was that NSA's focus is external, right? They have to look outside of the United States. So as soon as something crosses inside of the boundaries of the US, they don't necessarily have a mandate to be able to look at that. So that's where collaboration, I think, is really important to help them get that telemetry, get that visibility, and get that enrichment that they don't get.
Okay. So how would you define then a success, you know, successful campaign or story within the CCC's mission?
Yeah. So what I define as success is that if we have intelligence insight at a classified level of a specific nation state adversary who has the intent to target, has the capabilities, are potentially, we know the infrastructure they're leveraging, we're able to sanitize that information. What that basically means is we bring it down to a lower classification. For those of you that have worked in this business for a long period of time, that used to be around weeks and months that we would try to figure out how to do that. We've now gotten into a process, even as it relates to, say, PRC targeting critical infrastructure, we've been able to do that now within hours.
Oh, wow.
And because of the collaborative platform that we've built in an unclassified environment with partners, we've been able to get it into the hands of people that can do something about it, right? No offense, but the solution is not NSA or even our FBI and CISA colleagues knocking on 1,000 doors. It's really about how do we leverage the capabilities, insights, and perspective of the private sector partners to really build those protective measures at scale. So we have a ton of success where we've been able to get that information out to the right people to do things. But also, quite honestly, what I see as success is when our industry partners come to us and say, that information, not exactly what I need, not helpful, right? This is the type of data that I need. Also, can you help me better understand some of the technical attributes behind this capability or this malware so that I can actually build a defensive signature to deploy to my platform? That real-time feedback is making us better as a nation. It's making a better use of the intelligence community as well as the federal government, because it ensures that if we're going to give you information, you can actually use it, as opposed to being like, okay, this is useless. It's 3 months old and I have no idea what to do with it.
A good example, I think, was right as we're leading up to the Russian invasion, or most recent Russian invasion of Ukraine, was when we started working closely together, because there was, obviously, we all knew that this was impending or possibly going to happen. And there was a lot of concern about Russian threat actors having cyber spillover, right? There's things like NotPetya, where there's $10 billion in damage as a result of NotPetya, which was associated to the GRU, the Russian main intelligence unit of the military. And so leading up to that conflict is where things like the CCC really lights up and people start sharing information proactively and not just one-to-one between CrowdStrike and NSA, but lots of partners in the same space being able to share that information in order to make sure that we are safer. Sure. As a nation.
So we're talking about operationalizing that intelligence in a way to defend against some pretty bad things happening, right? So bad things happening from foreign intelligence agencies. You know, here at CrowdStrike, we're constantly tracking, you know, e-crime groups, hacktivist groups, and nation-state groups. And so I wanted to do a quick around the world and cover different actors, and maybe your quick perspective for the audience on maybe the threats that we're seeing and you know, kind of your advice on, you know, how to defend. So let's start with Russia. You just talked about Russia. What's going on with Russia?
Well, am I supposed to like swipe left or?
Exactly. Yes, you're supposed to.
What are we doing here? I think over the last year, we've seen Russia has been very focused on the conflict in Ukraine, in the adjacent kind of area like Moldova, where they've got, increasing conflict with regards to like Transnistria, and there's conflict, you know, in Bosnia, Serbia. So, you know, it's very much become a regional focus for Russia. And I think, you know, we haven't seen as much of it here in the U.S. outside of the recent compromise at Microsoft, I think was one of the more recent examples with the Russians kind of crossing the Atlantic.
Yeah. All right.
So for Russia, as Adam characterized, right, we're really focusing on what's happening in Russia, Ukraine. I think at the beginning of the war, right, we had a lot of good insights flowing in on what activity. We saw a lot of wipers used. We were able to really quickly mitigate that. We saw some activity against specific departments. But again, U.S. private sector corporations out there at the forefront helping defend that territory. I think as the war's dragged on, we've seen different tradecraft now deployed, right? Everyone's getting lessons learned on what type of tradecraft works and what doesn't, and that includes our adversaries. And so continuing to see what's happening in Russia and Ukraine with how the Russians are doing cyber operations, but also what Adam referenced, right, is the increasing focus on how we are seeing SVR, Midnight Blizzard, the Russians target MSPs and cloud providers, right? So how do they get into those specific entities to steal some kingdom keys, right, on enabling them to basically have any victim they want anywhere in the world? That is cybersecurity operations at scale. And using every piece of tradecraft. And so we're really focused on better understanding how to protect against that, because it is very difficult to stay in front of a very extremely advanced adversary when they know what they want and they know how to get to it. And so that's one piece of focus. I think the other thing, just an emerging threat on the Russia side that we're tracking, and Adam and I were talking about it earlier, is, you know, the malware that was used against Biosat at the beginning of the war, known as Acid Rain. There was most recently public reporting yesterday about the fact, or about in the last 48 hours, the fact that that variant was uploaded to VirusTotal and there was modifications made to it. So as people are trying to develop that capability, I know CrowdStrike put something out. So really focusing on, again, how they are adapting and evolving their tradecrafting capabilities to avoid detection, because they know that we can protect against certain things.
Got it.
And who they targeted. Right?
Yeah. And who they targeted.
Yeah.
Important. All right, let's go to China. Morgan?
Oh, so yeah. So, you know, I think I've already touched on what the biggest priority for us, right? So when it comes to China, it is the number one priority of the Department of Defense for the U.S. It is a key focus in the Indo-PACOM AOR. It is how are we going to protect our U.S. assets and our allies' assets if, in fact, there's an invasion of Taiwan, both abroad and near. And so I think there's a lot of work right now that better understand the defense critical infrastructure that underpins a lot of military operations in the AOR. Volt Typhoon is a huge focus and threat for us as U.S. critical infrastructure. But for those of you who know cyber adversaries well, very rarely do our adversaries use capabilities against the U.S. that they're not using against our partners across the world. And so this is not just a U.S.-centric problem we have to focus on. And Volt Typhoon in particular, or Vanguard Panda, there's a few names, but Vanguard Panda uses and looks like multiple entities across the PRC government. It is not just a specific infrastructure, but specific capability. And so you have blended operations, and that become very difficult to pull apart the intent. What are they trying to accomplish? What's the tradecraft, and how do you protect against it?
Yeah,
I'm glad that you switched to
Vanguard Panda. I got it. I'm on it. I know all the names. There's only 12.
I was taking notes. But I think interestingly there, and it's been in the news quite a bit, is that they're doing pre-positioning. They are doing what we would characterize as operational preparation of the environment, and how I think that's a significant shift in what we've seen from China, which is traditionally engaged in industrial espionage and intel collection broadly. And so to see them starting to shift into that and maintaining access, I think that's a big concern for us, you know, as a Western society.
Sure.
And I think the one thing I would point to is I heard the conversation earlier where, you know, the fact that you had Director Easterly, General Nakasone, Director Ray, and Honorable Coker all sitting in front of Congress and testifying publicly about this threat and talking about it in unison just shows you how much we're concerned about it, but we're working together as a U.S. government with our private sector partners to really build a mitigation plan. But one of the key factors that we think we ask people to focus on is the fact that when you talk about tradecraft and living off the land, this is not simple work for a SOC or a network defender. There is no IP list. There is no malware to search for. It takes a significant amount of insight and analysis to be able to find these adversaries. I think that's one of the reasons we look to expertise that they have at CrowdStrike and at various other entities, because it is in-depth analysis is the only way to find these actors.
Agreed. We see them a lot. We definitely see a lot of activity. Let's go with two more. We have some time for two more countries, and we'll wrap up here shortly. Iran, maybe, Adam?
I'll swipe left on that one.
You gonna swipe?
Obviously, we've been seeing an escalation in tensions between Iran and the West for several years now, going back to the tanker wars in 2019, the targeted killing of General Qassem Soleimani in 2020. I'll fast forward through history to the 7 October events, which has pitted Iranian proxies against the West in a more significant way with the conflict in Yemen. And in fact, one of their proxies we just gave a new name to today, I think it was, which is Incendiary Jackal, which is the name for Hezbollah, which has got it was tracked as Moon Shuttle by CrowdStrike for a while, but now it's been officially designated. So I think there's a lot more to come there, unfortunately, with Iran as this conflict continues to push forward.
We're good.
The only thing that I would add, and I think that, you know, I would say CrowdStrike was at the forefront of really leading the analysis publicly on a lot of the stuff that was happening with Iran and cyber operations. The one thing that we're concerned about when it comes to Iran is obviously they are focused on the immediate crisis. But what we also saw was, you know, Iranian cyber actors really looking to target Israeli manufacturers stateside, right? And so as you think about the defense contractors in the U.S. government who are providing support to Israel, to any entity, right? How do we protect them from those threats? Because if they're trying to disrupt a manufacturing supply chain, it's obviously of concern for both our allies, but also for ourselves.
Got it. Okay. And last one, maybe a little feedback on what's happening in North Korea.
I got to tell you, with North Korea, we don't like to say anyone's quiet, but from our perspective, we don't see them as much of a threshold. Obviously, still trying to build funding and cryptocurrency to support all of their operations, which is very lucrative for them. But that's mostly what we have from a tracking perspective. I don't know if Adam has more perspective.
I think given some of the visibility we have, we've certainly concur with the focus on cryptocurrency. Those crazy dictator suits don't pay for themselves. And, so they do a lot of cryptocurrency theft and target fiat currency as well. One of the other areas, and I think people tend to miscalculate North Korea. They think of it as the hermit kingdom and that it's completely cut off from the internet, but it really, they're some of the top cyber threat actors, I think, out there. We've seen them engage in economic espionage as well. They've targeted power and various other sectors in order to steal that technology and be able to replicate it. You know, something like only 30% of North Koreans have access to reliable power. Kim Jong-un knows that he needs to kind of elevate the quality of life. So I think we've seen that they've looked to China as the model of how to start to do espionage and economic espionage to better the average life of a North Korean, you know, a little bit. I don't think that they're trying to turn it into a full capitalist society, but I think they recognize that in order to maintain power over the people, they need to have, you know, some improvement that they can be like, look, all this great stuff we've been doing.
We have a really good podcast episode, not to be shameless about plugging the episodes, but it's a good one. Check it out. So one new exciting thing that the CCC is working on is, you know, this AI security center. Do you mind describing what that program looks like?
AI, what's that?
Exactly.
In September 2023, General Nakasone announced the creation of the AI Security Center, which is essentially a component of the Cybersecurity Collaboration Center. We're not great on naming like CrowdStrike is, so we just put centers and centers, to be completely honest with you. But the AI Security Center is really focused on both better understanding and creating both threat information and mitigation guidance as it relates to how our cyber actors and adversaries are using AI to improve the speed of their operations. So how do you protect against that? But separately, also, how do you secure and deploy AI systems in a really right in the right way? And so we are looking at vulnerabilities in AI systems through the entire cycle. So all the way from data collection to deployment and execution. And then we are trying to create best practices and mitigation guidance that we can put out publicly so people understand how to protect against it. Yeah. We also think that there's a huge benefit in the AI technology for cyber operations and how we're going to use it as a government. And so we're looking at the ways that we can opportunistically leverage the technology even more in what we're doing at the National Security Agency. So there's a lot of different work, but the AI Security Center in particular is focused on how do we secure those AI systems as a whole.
There was a video that is questionable in its authenticity, but anything to add on maybe, you know, building up programs for identifying deepfakes?
So I think deepfake technology is something that we're looking at, right? Yeah. And how do you detect and protect against it? It is something that we'll probably look to produce a product on within the next year or so, just on our insights and technical expertise. There's obviously a lot of fantastic expertise in the private sector. The one thing that I've heard constantly from our industry partners is that when it comes to AI technology, when you talk about best practices or regulation, talk to the practitioners, talk to the people that are actually using it every single day as part of their operations. They'll give you a sense of how they're leveraging it. Then you can talk about how to protect it. And so it will be, deepfakes is something we'll focus on, but I think there's a ton of work that needs to happen in this space.
Morgan, at a high level, do you mind just maybe kind of as a last question here, describe some of the work that you're doing in the defense industrial base?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So our role in supporting the defense industrial base is in support of the Department of Defense and their sector risk management agency role. We have three specific lines of effort that we really focus on. The first one is working with the best and biggest cybersecurity companies who have the broadest reach and protect the most customers at once, like CrowdStrike. The second one is to provide free cybersecurity services to the small to medium-sized businesses. This is focusing on the attack vectors that we know our adversaries use the most, so like protective DNS. And so that we're scaling that out and doing supply chain illumination of the key weapons platforms. That's how we target who enroll in those services. And then the third piece actually is a little bit different, but something I'd encourage everyone to think about if you're in the cybersecurity community is how do we have an active role in the standards development organizations for things like 5G, 6G, IoT, smart cities, and AI? So that we're ensuring that we have the right security measures in all of those future technologies to protect against the simple things. We'll have a different problem in the future, but you know, try to ensure we're not experiencing the same issues 20 to 30 years from now.
You know, any just, you know, advice, kind of parting words for the audience on, you know, obviously adversaries are getting, you know, they're relentless, they're getting more sophisticated, you know, words of encouragement for the audience.
Adam, do you want to go first?
Sure. the part you left out is that they're getting faster.
They are getting faster.
We had our global threat report come out recently, and we calculate the breakout time, how long it takes for an adversary to get initial access and then move laterally or deeper into the network, because now you're chasing them. And in 2022, it was 84 minutes. In 2023, it was 62 minutes. So the adversary got 22 minutes faster over the course of 2023, and I think we'll see 2024 will follow similar suit. And the fastest breakout time went from 7 minutes to 2 minutes and 7 seconds. So that's less time than I think I was talking.
Exactly.
I think you're supposed to be sunshine. That was supposed to be sunshine.
No, you're sunshine.
Okay, all right. So here's what I will say is that the adversary is getting faster, but we're also talking about the adversary a lot more, because we're discovering them because of the fact that we're bringing together both intel-driven collaboration, the private sector insights. We're quickly developing mitigation guidance. You see a lot of joint SEAL advisories coming out from the U.S. government. Almost all of those are informed by private sector insights and collaboration. And so I will tell you that in the last 2 years, we really have changed the game on how we are bringing the pieces together better so that we can stay ahead of the adversary. And we have been successful in thwarting a lot of things. because of the relationships that we've built, like the one on here on stage.
Awesome.
And that's really important. I think it's thank you for coming and for helping with all that, because when we started CrowdStrike back in 2011, you didn't even say China, right? Like, there was no, Morgan was kept locked in a room. And so, you know, this, I think, is representative of the fact that we do need to work together, because this is a common adversary and a common problem.
Awesome. This is a fantastic discussion, Morgan. Thank you so much, Adam. Thank you for having us. We enjoyed this discussion, and we'll hear a lot more about this on the next podcast episode. Give it a listen when you get a chance.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you like what you're hearing, subscribe to our podcast and head over to crowdstrike.com/adversaries to learn more about the many bad guys we track. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Adversary Universe podcast.
This is the Adversary Universe podcast.